Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast from CBS Sports.
1-1 pitch. Fastball pulled and passed. Alvarez in toward the corner.
Got a fantasy question? Email fantasybaseball at cbsi.com. Get ready to win your league.
Where fantasy becomes reality.
Now, here's Adam, Scott, Heath, and Chris.
All right, well, finally, a little action at the trade deadline. Trevor Bauer, Yasiel Puig, Chris Martin, all changing addresses. Welcome to the show. This is Fantasy Baseball Today on July 31st. It's the trade deadline day. Chris Towers is here. Chris, do you think we will have a wacky Wednesday with the trade deadline or a whatever Wednesday?
Selfishly, I hope we don't. Because, Scott White works during the evening, so anything that happens before the trade deadline, I'm going to have to write about.
Uh-oh.
Frankly, everyone knows that I'm pretty lazy. So If everyone could just stand pat, stay where they are, all your teams are good, nobody needs any upgrades.
Agreed.
No, I would expect we won't see much action. It doesn't sound like Bumgarner or Syndergaard are particularly likely to be moved by now. Unfortunately, I think in Bumgarner's case for the Giants, because I think that'd be a mistake, although it'd probably be better for his fantasy value to stay there.
Well, let's talk about the trades, and then we'll get into everything that went on the field, including a pretty, by today's standards, a pretty epic brawl in the Pirates-Reds game. I mean,
that was wild.
Yeah, and I'm happy to say this. You just really don't get legit brawls anymore. But we kind of got one yesterday. Like, remember when people used they were kicking each other, and they were just very mean to each other. It doesn't really happen. Okay. Anyway, so here's the trade. Cincinnati gets Trevor Bauer. He can be a free agent after 2020. He's gonna make a lot of money next year, but they've got him for another year. In terms of Cincinnati, Tyler Mahle is on the IL, but you got Tanner Roark, Di Sclafani, probably not Alex Wood. One of those guys is likely leaving the rotation. Do we know who Bauer's replacing?
Well, I guess Mahle went on the IL for Alex Wood, so that would have been the obvious answer. At this point, I think maybe Di Sclafani probably has the best chance to lose his job, but I'm not 100% sure that he's done enough to lose it yet.
I think Roark, Roark's got some bullpen experience. Could be him. He's less interesting than Di Sclafani from a fantasy standpoint, so I hope it's him.
Yeah, I think maybe they just go six-man for a little while.
Okay, we'll find out.
It's hard to say right now.
Cleveland getting Yasiel Puig and Franmil Reyes and Logan Allen and a couple of minor leaguers, infielder Victor Nova and pitcher Scott Moss. So, yeah, I mean, Puig and Reyes could start every day, right? This is great for Reyes.
Yeah, I'm super excited about this for Reyes especially. Puig, it's probably close to a lateral move, if not a bad move in terms of park, but I think for Reyes especially, this is going to, and he hasn't been sitting out too much lately anyway, but I think in terms of the park factor, it's a pretty good move for him. So I like what it's going to mean for his fantasy value. And he was someone who I expected to perform better in the second half of the season anyway. He's not a 253 hitter. I think he's going to hit more like 270 with just a ton of power.
So Reyes is 71% owned. Franmil Reyes, now a start. You would think a pretty regular player for the Cleveland Indians. He's been streaky all year. It's been annoying. But 255 with a 536 slugging percentage. I mean, he's really hit the ball hard. He has a five-game hitting streak with a home run in that stretch. By the way, I apologize for any audio issues we might have. We have some connectivity issues today. Would you drop Lorenzo Cain for Franmil Reyes?
I think I would, but I would hope I have a player who's a little less interesting than Lorenzo Cain.
Would you rather have Michael Conforto or Franmil Reyes?
I think Conforto will be better, but it's close.
Okay. Hunter Renfro or Franmil Reyes? Renfro solidified now as a starter, it seems.
I think it's pretty similar in terms of their likely power output, and I think Reyes is going to hit for a better average.
Yeah, Renfro is 76% owned. He has been playing just about every day. He's having a pretty miserable July, and he's going to be a streaky guy. but a 685 OPS in July, 207 batting average for Hunter Renfroe. Manuel Margot also, he had sat two of the last four games. Hopefully this gets him in the lineup more. He's 3-for-24, I think now 3-for-28 in his last nine games. So he's slumping a bit, but still good plate discipline in that stretch. So Matt Margot,
Mike is well hired back in the lineup.
Yeah, he's been in the lineup a little bit lately, but and he's 6-for-15 with a home run and three doubles. Will Myers is 51% owned.
I'm just not sure that's something I'd get excited about. Like, he does have speed and power, but he's going to be a drag on batting average. And I don't know, he hasn't really fixed the contact issues as the season's gone on. And that's been the biggest issue for him. You know, he was never a great plate discipline guy, but his strikeout rate for the season is 36%. It's one of the worst in baseball. So it's all about making contact for me with him. If he can start making a little better contact, maybe he can hit 250, 260 and be a useful fantasy option. But in terms of Reyes, Renfroe, and Myers, he's third for me by a pretty wide margin.
And the Padres also in this deal getting a minor league outfielder, Taylor Trammell, pretty good prospect. In terms of the prospects in this deal, Chris, anyone you think makes an impact this year?
No, Trammell was someone before the season who did seem like he might have had the chance to get called up, but given that San Diego already has too many outfielders and the fact that he just hasn't been particularly good in Double A, hitting just 236, decent plate discipline actually, but has not been the guy that we hope to see. The profile does look like it could be really good for fantasy down the line, you know, a little bit of pop, a lot of speed, and someone that I think scouts expect to kind of put it all together and take a leap. But I'd be surprised if we saw him this season.
That's Taylor Trammell now with the Padres. Okay, so we'll talk about the Braves bullpen in a minute, but let's get a little bit deeper into this. So Trevor Bauer, I'm going to tell you, is a 4.48 ERA at home and 16 home runs allowed, and a 2.84 ERA on the road and 6 home runs allowed. Of course, this is a small park he's going to. I think that this is bad. I'm not happy about it for Bauer. And I believe that if Trevor Bauer's right, it doesn't really matter who he's facing or where he's pitching. I think he's got enough great stuff to overcome it. And you look and you say, well, look, he's not facing Kansas City, Detroit, or the White Sox this year. He struggled against all three of those teams. It's weird. So the reason I don't like it, Chris, is because Trevor Bauer this season has not been right. He's walked too many guys. And he has gotten better, deeper into games. I don't think he's going to be allowed to throw 115-plus pitches basically every time out. He might, but I don't know that he will.
Because it's not like Terry Francona's just letting all the Indians starters go deep. It's really just a Trevor Bauer thing. And so, you know, if Trevor Bauer, I mean, you know, maybe what happens is when you're managing Trevor Bauer and he starts talking about how he needs to be let go. Oh my God, why am I? Jeez,
yeah,
what is going on with my brain? When he starts like going on and on about how he needs to, you know, be let deep into games, and you're the manager and you're just like, oh, I'm just gonna let him do it because I don't want to listen to Trevor Bauer talk anymore. Is what I would say.
All right, well, what do you think? Value up, down, or the same? I'm a little concerned. I think it's a worse team, you know? So I think value's down a little bit for Bauer.
Slight downgrade. I would think it's probably a worse defensive team, although I haven't looked at the numbers for that exactly. And I also, kind of like what you said, I don't know how much it matters. He's so talented, as he showed last year, that he should be able to overcome that. The issue is just that we don't know if he's actually good or whether last year was just a fluke. That it's hard to fake what he did last year, but his whole career has been defined by mediocrity. This year looks more like every year before last year. It's not like he's had a lot of bad luck. He just hasn't been that good.
Yeah. Again, you know, I know Scott and I are sort of on the same page on this, and you and Heath are sort of on the same page on this, which should come as no surprise. I don't really break down Bauer's career quite the same way. I look at the second half of 2017. What did he do? He introduced a slider or something like that. He changed his arsenal. He changed his career. and he became an ace. He carried it over into 2018. That's what I think the new Trevor Bauer is. This is just weird. Like, he was terrible before that. This is like, he's a good pitcher. He's just walking too many guys. All right, so we agree, slight downgrade for Bauer. Yasiel Puig, slight upgrade. He's been a lot better at home than on the road. I'm sorry, I meant slight downgrade.
Lateral move. Probably a better offense given the way Jose Ramirez has been hitting and the addition of Franmil Reyes. They go, you know, six deep in quality hitters now, I think. But yeah, it's a slightly worse home park. It's not a significantly worse home park. I think he'll be fine.
Yeah, maybe a slight downgrade for a guy like Jose Berríos, who, if he has to face the Indians, is all of a sudden facing a much tougher lineup. There are two players who I think are interesting adds because of this trade. And I picked both of them up yesterday in one league. I picked one of them up in one league. You know, I was looking for both of them. First of all, I'm looking for Reyes everywhere. Franmil Reyes is available. That's who I want. But Josh Van Meter and Danny Salazar. Salazar is going to make his Indians debut, his 2018 debut tomorrow. He's going to throw about 50 pitches, ideally. So you don't want to start him, but you might want to add him. And Van Meter, he sat yesterday. He went 0-1 as a pinch hitter. Previous five games, 10-for-18 with three homers. 22% only shortstop eligible. He's outfield eligible. It might be second base eligible. I'll check on that. But who are you more interested in picking up, Josh Van Meter or Danny Salazar?
Probably Van Meter. I'm a big fan of Danny Salazar's, but I'm just not sure he's going to be allowed to be a real starter this season. Coming back from, you know, the kind of shoulder issues that threatened to ruin his career, I'd be surprised if he's throwing more than 85 or 90 pitches, even at his most, this season. So I think we're going to see a lot of 4, maybe 5 inning starts from him. Whereas Van Meter, you look at a lot of the underlying stats, do largely back up what he's done. He's not going to hit for this kind of power moving forward, but he has turned himself into a decent power hitter and, you know, makes enough contact that I don't think he's going to get cheated.
Yeah, he's pretty interesting. What was I look? Oh, his eligibility. Let's take a look here. Van Meter, it's one word, VanMeter, killing time. He is second, third, short, and outfield eligible.
Yeah.
Drop.
Go ahead.
Would you drop Scott Kingery for Josh Van Meter?
I think that's a very close one. I think they're similar players. I think Kingery is probably a little more talented, but Meter might play a little more.
Yeah. Van Meter? I think you just call him Meter.
I'm just trying to be efficient.
National Lampoon's Wilder. Okay, I think that's about it for this trade. Anything else? Or moving on to the Braves trade?
No, I think that's it.
Cool.
I think we covered everything. Good job.
So the Braves traded Coby Allard for Chris Martin, minor league pitcher Coby Allard. He's had some big league time, too. Martin's just straight up having a better season than Luke Jackson, who was awful yesterday in a non-save situation. Chris Martin's 10% owned. Luke Jackson's 75% owned. What do you think happens going forward? They didn't seem I didn't see anything regarding this. I did see, I think their GM said, like, I'm going to let Snitker figure that out. But what do you think?
This is another one where it's such a big outlier for Chris Martin's career, what he's doing this season, that it's hard for me to buy into what he's done. He has changed his pitch profile a little bit, but not necessarily in ways that would lead me to think he would get a lot more strikeouts. So I don't buy him as a very good reliever. And, you know, it is worth noting that Luke Jackson for a long time was the best Braves reliever. And then things kind of fell apart on him. So there's no guarantee that what Chris Martin's doing right now will hold over, and he does have a 4 FIP. So I wouldn't be rushing out to add him. No, I will see what the Braves decide to do with the ninth inning. I'd rather let them figure that out before I try to add somebody.
Yeah, I mean, Anthony Swarzak is, I guess you could still say, in the mix. But I'm guessing Luke Jackson gets the next save chance, unless maybe if it's tonight. It won't happen, but 7 earned runs in his last 6 appearances for Jackson. His ERA has risen almost a run from 2.66 to 3.60. We got some standouts. Andrew Benintendi's hot. Zach Gallen had a second straight awesome start. And people are asking about Drew Smyly. Does Drew Smyly matter? We'll talk about it after this quick break.
The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. Nothing beats a weekend away with the family in the great outdoors, whether it's camping, hiking, river rafting, or anything in between. With third-row seating, nobody is left out. The entire family can experience the thrill together. And nobody wants a dead phone. Available dual wireless charging pads make it so nobody gets stuck and we can check our fantasy baseball teams together. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Enough about the trades. Let's talk baseball. Chris, Andrew Benintendi has 13 hits in his last five games, I think. He's homering a lot lately. One of them was stupid. It was a stupid, pesky, stupid pull. He's currently the number 28 outfielder in points, number 35 in Roto, but he's hot. And are you encouraged, or it's just a hot streak?
You're probably asking the wrong guy. I'm just not a big Andrew Benintendi believer, and the underlying Statcast data is really, really not in his favor. He has an expected batting average of 250, expected slugging of 432, so it's actually saying that he's probably overperformed a little bit this season. That's a really bad sign given how disappointing he is, but still plays in that great park, still gets a lot of counting stats. I think it's probably just a hot streak. I haven't seen much that he's changed that would make me believe that there's something new going on.
The counting stats to me aren't great. It's 110 runs plus RBIs in about 100 games.
Yeah, they haven't been great this season.
Yeah, right, exactly. One thing that's interesting about Benintendi is that his numbers, his slash line is better against lefties than righties. So that shocks me. And that, you know, that's probably a recent development. Might be this hot streak. I will say this about Benintendi. He hit 16 home runs last year. 10 of them came in a 27-game stretch. So I hope it's not just a hot streak. Well, I kind of do because I don't own him on any teams, and I root against the Red Sox. Other than that, I hope, you know, for your sake, Benintendi owners, I hope it's not just a hot streak. Zach Gallen, 7 innings, 2 runs, 8 strikeouts against the Twins, 14 swinging strikes. His first 5 starts, Gallen did not go more than 5 1/3 in any of them. Now we're talking 2 straight 7-inning starts with 17 Ks in 14 innings. Very impressive. Yeah, what do you think about Zach Gallen, 71% own?
And he was pitching really well yesterday, and the best thing about it was they let him go to 105 pitches. He had been previously capped at 99, and there were some concerns that he was only going to be a 90 to 95 pitch guy most outings. So the fact that they let him go that deep is a very good sign. He was uncharacteristically wild early on in his major league career, and that had never really been an issue for him in the minors. So the fact that over the last 2 starts now he has 4 walks and 14 innings to go with those 17 strikeouts, that seems to me more like what we should expect from Gallen moving forward. Pretty good control, good strikeouts. And if you dropped him, you're probably regretting it at this point. He is an extremely talented pitcher who deserves to be added. He's 71% owned right now. I think that's probably a little low.
Would you drop Jake Odorizzi, who he faced last night, for Gallen?
What was Odorizzi's final line yesterday? He pitched well.
It was like 5 1/3, 1 run, something like that.
Yeah, I think
it was 5 2/3, 4 hits, 1 run, 5 strikeouts. He had an 8.44 ERA in his previous 6 starts, and next week he faces Cleveland. He'll get Kansas City this weekend. He'll get Cleveland the following week. Yeah, I don't have much interest in Odorizzi. I think I would take a shot on Gallen.
Yeah, I think I would. It's one of those situations where I would hope I have someone who's done a little less than Odorizzi this year, and I'm sure Scott White would say no way, because I think he's still really buying Odorizzi. But the strikeouts have gone away lately. I think 3 or fewer in 4 of his last 7 starts.
Wow.
And his high in that span is 7. He hasn't gone 6 innings in any of those starts either. So, yeah, I'd rather have Gallen than Odorizzi.
How about Julio Teheran, who has a 1.48 ERA in his last five starts? Teheran, who, by the way, is at Miami next week.
I would rather have Gallen.
Okay. I have Julio Teheran in a segment called LOL.
Like, if he just keeps doing this, that's fine. Whatever. We'll live with him continuing to outperform his peripherals by a run or more. And we'll just have to look stupid because he didn't do it last year to this extent. I don't know. It's dumb.
1.28 whip for Teheran and a 3.38 ERA. My last standout is Drew Smyly. He's made two starts for the Phillies, 6 innings, 1 run, 8 Ks at Pittsburgh, 7 innings, no earned runs, 5 Ks against San Francisco, 20% owned. Any interest in Drew Smyly, who just has not been a good pitcher for a long time, mostly due to injury, but was terrible, was released by the Rangers.
Yeah, he had not been a pitcher for a long time. Hadn't pitched in 2017 or 2018, was miserable with the Rangers, but you know, it's interesting looking at how he's pitching in the two starts with the Phillies. He's largely abandoned his fastball. He's always been a 55% fastball guy usually. He's down to 38%. He's throwing it a little bit harder, but for the most part, it's just a lot more cutters and a lot more curveballs since getting to the Phillies. And that's interesting because he's been a guy who doesn't have a great fastball and has always been victimized by long balls, I think, in part because of that. So I'm interested. He's definitely well below Gallen. I wouldn't drop Odorizzi for him. I might rather have Teheran than him, but it's definitely interesting what he's doing. In a deeper league, I'll look at him for sure.
Would you drop Tyler Beady Little Eyes for Drew Smyly?
Yeah, he's turned back into a pumpkin, unfortunately.
Yeah. I mean, like, I have no faith in Drew Smyly. I understand what you're saying,
same.
But yeah. So at your own risk. But yeah, if you wanna drop a low upside guy for Smyly, then sure. Some leagues are deep enough. You need some Drew Smyly. Any standouts for you, Chris?
Let's move on to the injuries, news and notes, Adam.
Yeah, and I think it was a really revealing bullpen day too, so we'll talk about the bullpen. But news and notes, yeah, Pittsburgh and Cincinnati, yeah, that was a pretty legit brawl. Really, Amir Garrett went crazy. That's not someone I'd like to fight, by the way.
No. The like 6'9" guy who throws a 95-mile-an-hour fastball, definitely not at the top of the list of guys that I'm looking to get into a scuff with. Although I wouldn't say there's anyone I want to fight.
No, I don't want to fight anyone. If there were one big leaguer that I think I might be able to take, oh boy. It's a really ridiculous conversation, but I would just go with the smallest one I can think of, which is Ronald Torres, who, of course, would destroy me.
He would destroy you.
Yeah, he would kill me. Yeah,
he would pick you up and toss you.
He would, yeah, he would kill me. Yeah. Tim Anderson is back. Ken Giles had a cortisone shot in his elbow. He won't throw for 2 days. Luke Voit could likely be headed. Yeah, I shouldn't have said the word likely, but he could be headed to the IL. He's having an MRI for a core muscle injury, which he already missed some time with. Ramon Laureano is on the IL with a stress reaction in his shin. By the way, that sucks, by the way. But if Luke Voit goes on the IL, I imagine a little more steady playing time for Gio Urshela, who's got like an 830-ish OPS.
Yeah, I can't make sense of it, but yeah, that's probably true.
Yeah, like I would imagine LeMahieu plays first base. If LeMahieu himself doesn't go on the IL, he's hoping to play today. Yeah, Laureano on the L. Stress reaction in his shin. That is a tough break.
Yeah. Hopefully it's not a long-term thing, but the problem with stress reactions is they're kind of the kind of injury that you really do just need to take the entire time that it takes to heal off. And if you try to come back too early, it can just get worse because a lot of it is, you know, because of this repetitive stress that's causing the injury.
More news and notes. Yoan Moncada day-to-day. Gary Sanchez won't come off the IL this weekend. We could have an update on Luke Weaver soon. We haven't sung that in a while. Brendan McKay could be called up today or tomorrow to start at Boston. I am not going to start Brendan McKay at Boston. Not at all.
Probably not. Can we just let him stay up? Like, you just lost Blake Snell. Can we make this for good?
And I'd like him to be used with an opener, personally.
I'm fine. I think he's talented enough that it wouldn't matter. I think using an opener would make him better, but I think it would make most pitchers better. Maybe all.
You think Chris Paddock is really going to get shut down? He's at 103rd right now, and he missed all of 2017. He threw 90 innings in 2018. So, I mean, I feel like getting up to 130 would really benefit them to unleash him for 180 next year. You know, so he's got 2 months left.
No, I don't think he'll be shut down entirely. Because, I mean, if they fall way out of the race because they're still technically in it, maybe they shut him down in September. But, no, I would still expect we see, you know, gosh, it might only be 7 or 8 more starts, though. Because even 8 starts.
Well, I don't know about that. I was thinking more like 5 to 6 starts.
Yeah.
But they spread him out, I believe.
Yeah, but he's been at 4 starts per month pretty much the entire season.
4 starts per month. That's spreading out, yeah.
Yeah, it'd be tough to get him to 130 innings, even spreading him out without shutting him down. So that, if it does happen, it won't be till the last couple of weeks of the season.
Okay. Yeah, so I'm less likely to trade him in my Roto league. He's so much better in Roto than he is in points.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you, Chris. Good insight there. I'm just trying to look at their rotation. Yeah. So like since the last time Paddock pitched, they went Lamet, Lauer, Lucchesi, Quantrill, opener, and then Paddock. So he pitches, you know, every 6 or so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where am I? More news and notes. Still, oh, Corey Kluber is approaching a rehab assignment. That's good. Garrett Cooper left with a hamstring injury. That's bad. Jose Altuve was caught stealing. That's good and bad. He's running. That's good. Kevin Kiermaier should be back today. D. Gordon could be back soon. Ross Stripling's injury appears to be a short-term one. Julio Urias did not do well on his start yesterday. Not surprising. 2 runs on 6 hits and 2 2/3 at Colorado.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like Stripling's going to make his next start, though, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sean Manaea should make his 2019 debut soon. Manaea or Salazar, who would you rather have?
I'd rather have Sean Manaea. I think Salazar might be better on a per inning basis, but I think we'll get more from Manaea. And you know, it was really weird last season. He had his best results ever, 3.59 ERA, but the strikeout rate collapsed. But before that, he had been a guy who got pretty good results from his secondary pitches in terms of swing and misses. He was a decent swing and miss pitcher who just didn't get the strikeouts. And, you know, it always seemed like just a little bit better distribution of his pitches could make him a better pitcher. If he's going to be in the rotation, I'm interested to see what he can do. And yeah, I'd be willing to add him.
All right, that's Sean Manaea. Would you rather have Sean Manaea or Zach Gallen?
Gallen.
Okay. And Vladimir Guerrero has hit 2 grand slams in his last 10 games. That's nice. And finally, Marcelo Zuna began a rehab assignment. That is also nice. It's bullpen time. All right, so I do think it was a revealing day. Archie Bradley got a save.
Yep.
Taylor Rogers got a save. Sergio Romo pitched the 8th. Emilio Pagan got a 4-out save. Rowenis Elias has now 5 straight scoreless appearances, and he got his 14th save. Liam Hendricks blew another save. He's been bad lately, and Blake Treinen got the win in extras. And Freddie Peralta pitched in the 8th and 9th inning. He gave up a home run. Josh Hader took the loss in the 10th. And Edwin Diaz struggled again. He blew his 5th save of the season. He walked 2, gave up a run. You sound exasperated.
It's just unbelievable.
Yeah, terrible year. Terrible year. But,
and then, let this be a lesson.
No,
don't pay for...
No, no, you're wrong.
No, don't pay for the best closer from last year. Because this is what happens. Unless you're talking about a guy like Pete Kenley Jansen or Craig Kimbrell who has done it for 5 or 6 years. Because the thing with Edwin Diaz was, it wasn't like I thought he would be bad this season. But in order to get him, you had to reach probably a round earlier than any closer was going. He didn't just have to be good. He had to be unbelievably good yet again to justify that cost. And we see this every year. There's always a guy who breaks out as a closer, and because we're talking about 65 inning samples. And when we're looking at starting pitchers, the guy is a good, you know, we're not looking at Lucas Giolito as the best pitcher in baseball because he had a really good 65 innings in April and May. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. No, I disagree, though. I think that your argument's fine, but in my opinion, not with Edwin Diaz. I do think going into this year, there was plenty of reason to believe that Edwin Diaz was the next Kenley Jansen type, the next elite closer that was going to be that good year after year after year. And whether or not he finishes the number one relief pitcher probably would just depend on the save total. But in terms of ratios, ERA, whip, and strikeouts, you know, you had to figure Diaz was going to be one of the best. I'm surprised to see him pitching this poorly. And I also think, Chris, that the next group of relievers that went, Chapman, Kenley Jansen, who am I forgetting? Blake Treinen, they all had question marks. Chapman and Jansen are on the back end of their career. So I thought it was just none of us took Edwin Diaz because, yeah, I agree. Like, having to take him around earlier felt a little rough. But I just think you're going a little bit too far. I think there was justification for treating Edwin Diaz like that.
My thing is, it's not like, oh, you shouldn't have taken Edwin Diaz. You should have taken the next group of elite closers. If we're learning one thing, and we're learning a lot of things every day on the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast, but over the last couple of years, it's really, really hard to justify investing a lot in closers. I just, even more so than in the past, because there are so many more injuries. There are so many home runs. There are so many teams who aren't willing to stick with guys through thick and thin that it just makes it really tough to justify. Yes, Diaz hasn't lost his job, so a lot of that doesn't apply to him. But it shouldn't be a complete surprise given the fact that he wasn't that good in 2017.
Yeah, it's true. I sort of dismissed 2017 because, as I recall, in 2017, he wasn't very good. He got removed from the role. He took a little breather from it. He came back, and he was good once again. Very good. I took a different approach to relief pitcher this year because it was the first year where it seemed like only half of the jobs were settled. And we kind of bought into the notion that managers were going to use matchups a lot more. I don't really think that's happened. Like, I would say they've used matchups a little bit more, but I think most teams have a closer.
Yeah, I don't think they use matchups, but they have a closer for a couple of weeks. The leash is a lot shorter these days.
Well, that, yeah. Yeah, but I think we were sort of expecting like a Rays situation. The Rays are a true, at least when everybody's been healthy, Alvarado, Castillo, Pagan, a true bullpen by committee.
Yeah.
There hasn't really been that much, including the Phillies. Now, if Robertson didn't get hurt, I don't know what would have happened. A lot of their guys got hurt. Tommy Hunter got hurt. Like, a lot of their guys, they just fell off. But they committed to Neris. I do feel like most teams, maybe it took them a little while, but the whole bullpen by committee was probably a little overblown and probably will going forward. Because I think when push comes to shove, most managers are going to want guys to have roles that they are familiar with, can have expectations for, you know, a routine.
Sports coaches are cowards.
I mean, it's easy to say when you're not actually in it. But if you know the personalities of your pitchers and they want to know what their role is, then that matters. That counts for something.
Sure.
All right. So what about Archie Bradley? Inning and a third for his first save. Go ahead.
I would love if he was the closer. I think he's the best pitcher in that bullpen. I don't buy what Yoan Lopez has done this season. I'm blanking on...
They have Hirano, yeah.
His control hasn't been as good this season, and it makes him a little shaky. I would love to see Archie Bradley really get that opportunity, but I think it'll be matchups. And it sounds like they want Greg Holland to be back in the role anyway, yeah, at some point.
Yeah. Bradley's only 15% owned, so there are worse flyers
yes,
to take.
I have him in a 15-team league.
I thought Freddy Peralta's usage was interesting yesterday. Again, he pitched the eighth and the ninth. He gave up a home run, I think, in the eighth, and then a scoreless ninth. I could see him getting some saves. And,
yeah,
and I do think he's going to be a pretty good reliever. So, okay, moving on.
He'll play up in the bullpen.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just weird. I think Josh Hader had two home runs allowed to lefties in his career before this season. He's got four after Matt Olson's walk-off.
So let's take a look at there. There could be a stat that could be very fun. It is the amount of hits Josh Hader's given up and the amount of home runs he's given up. Let me come back to that. We have more to get to. The Braves outfield's very interesting. And Josh Hader has given up 24 hits and 10 of them have been homers. That's kind of wild.
He's a regular Joey Gallo.
He's probably given up a sacrifice fly, though, unlike Joey Gallo. Okay, double dongs from yesterday. Adam Duvall went yard twice, and he's batting .529 in four games since replacing Nick Markakis. And Corey Dickerson went yard twice. That gives him four home runs this year, but 18 doubles in 43 games. Dickerson does sit against lefties. He's 32% owned. Duvall is 13% owned. Anything here, Chris?
You'd kind of hope Corey Dickerson gets traded. And I would think there's a decent chance the Braves acquire an outfielder and Duvall isn't playing every day anyway.
They'll find out today.
Duvall can hit for power.
Yeah, he's a 240, 250 hitter with pop.
Yeah.
Not necessarily an everyday player, but we'll see. Let's check in on some other guys. Give me your quick thoughts on these guys and their ownership percentages. Christian Walker, 55% owned. He's got a 913 OPS in June, homered yesterday. One thing about Walker that you should know, though, since David Peralta has returned to the lineup, he's sat 2 of 5 games. They have moving parts. They have Ketel Marte, who can play the outfield or second base. Eduardo Escobar, who can play second base or third base. Jake Lamb, who can play first or third. So, you know, David Peralta, even though he's an outfielder, it affects Christian Walker. 55% owned, Chris.
Yeah, I think that's about right. I wouldn't say he's someone I'm running out to grab if he's available, but, you know, we can know he can hit for power. It's just 250 with power is what everybody seems to do now.
Yeah, yeah. Austin Meadows is 96% owned. He has a .532 slugging percentage in July after a .299 slugging percentage in June. He has hit 3 home runs in July. They came in consecutive games. He's been all right other than that. Austin Meadows, 96% owned.
He is not as good as he was early in the season. He's definitely not as bad as he was in June. I still think he's probably not as good as his overall season line. But, you know, if he's more of a 280 hitter than a 290 hitter, there's nothing wrong with that.
You wouldn't drop Meadows for Van Meter, would you?
No.
How about for Renfro? I mean, sorry, how about for Reyes, Framil Reyes?
No, probably not.
Let's check in on Didi Gregorius. He's 89% owned. He's batting .276 with 7 home runs. His plate discipline is not nearly as good as it was last year. 38 games, by the way, for Didi. But he's been streaky within this short sample size, like some really big games, then like a 2-for-15 kind of thing. Whatever. Didi Gregorius.
He's always been streaky, so that shouldn't be surprising. You know, you've gotten the notes that he was a top 10 shortstop each of the previous two seasons. I'm not sure if he repeated those seasons, he'd be a top 10 shortstop this year. That's my concern, is just maybe the position has kind of passed him by. And if he is, you know, last year he did have better plate discipline, but for the most part, he's been kind of an all or nothing power hitter. And if that's all he is, I don't know if that stands out.
Yeah. And as far as the top 10 goes, I mean, 2 straight years of Didi being a top 10 shortstop while playing less than 140 games.
Mm-hmm.
So I do think if he played 100, let's say 55 games as what he was last year, it's probably top 10, because that's a 30 homer guy with good counting stats. That's my guess. I might be a little off on the numbers. Let's check in on Yuli Gurriel. Since his inside the park home run that just made Chris Towers furious, he does not have any homers. He has 1 extra base hit, but he is 8-for-19. Yuli.
He makes a lot of contact. He's going to get a lot of hits. It was never about that for me. It's just I don't buy him as a power source. You know, even moving forward, I was viewing him more as like a 20 homer guy over the course of a full season, because that's mostly what he's been. It's a little better than what he's been for his career, but the argument for Yuli Gurriel has always been a steady source of good to great batting average and good counting stats in that lineup, and I think that's still who he is.
All right, let's check in on Joey Votto. In his last 53 games, about half his season, Joey Votto is batting .311, but just 6 home runs, 14 doubles, an 844 OPS. I think we can pretty much give up on him being a power hitter, even though he homered yesterday. But do you think Joey Votto is a plus 300 hitter?
Yeah, I mean, it's come with a 356 BABIP, which is probably a little higher than you would expect from him moving forward. So maybe it's more like 295, 300 than 310. But yeah, I just, you know, it's kind of like the last time Miguel Cabrera was good, where it was a good batting average, but not much pop. And, you know, he's probably maybe closer to Yuli Gurriel. I think he's probably better, but not that much.
Joey Votto. And finally, let's check on AJ Pollock. He homered at Coors Field on Tuesday. Before that, he had been super cold. He had been 2-for-24 with a walk and 7 strikeouts. AJ Pollock's 88% owned. Does that feel justified to you?
Yes. Yeah, it does to me. I'm now maybe on the wrong person to ask because I'm the AJ Pollock guy.
And yes, you are.
I'm inclined to believe in him, but just looking at what he's done since coming off the IL, he's hitting 270 with an 880 OPS. That's pretty good. I think he is a legitimately above average power source at this point in his career, which is surprising because he wasn't for a long time and he's older. But the thing is, it's come at the expense a little bit of his batting average, and he's not going to run. So, you know, expectations should be lowered for him overall.
Yeah, I think Pollock, it's a shame. Those numbers since coming off the IL are good. It's a shame that it happened in such an intense hot streak. 406 batting average, 4 home runs in his first 9 games off the IL, and then a 2-for-24 slump before homering at Coors Field yesterday. Chris, here's a segment called These Guys Used to Be Good. These used to be very fantasy relevant, and they're both owned in fewer than 30%, less than 30% of leagues. Ender Inciarte. He sits against lefties, but he's basically replaced Austin Riley in the Braves outfield and Ender Inciarte. And Kyle Seager, who's on an 8-game hitting streak with a 355 batting average and an 1168 OPS. Do you think Ender Inciarte and or Kyle Seager could get back to being fantasy relevant?
Probably not, unless the Braves send down Austin Riley. But even then, I wouldn't be surprised, like I said, with Duvall, if they add an outfielder who could cut into both Duvall and Inciarte's playing time. And they just, we know the Braves don't let guys run when they're not batting leadoff. It's weird, but it's been true for years. And Inciarte, we saw last year, you know, ran a lot more when he was batting leadoff than when he was batting lower in the lineup. I think that's the thing you should expect when he's not batting leadoff, is he's not going to be a big steal guy. And he doesn't really do a lot else. He can kind of give you an empty batting average, hopefully.
All right, let's move on and talk about some of the pitchers from yesterday. When you look at, man, some great performances, Verlander, Bieber, Syndergaard were great. Darvish was really good.
Oh, we're going to talk about the Justin Bieber matchup last night?
That was very good. I like that. Justin Verlander versus Shane Bieber. Yeah, they were excellent. Verlander was better. And then you got Yu Darvish, who seems to have turned his season around. David Price, who's really struggling, and I don't know that I would start him at the Yankees this week. That is not a house of horrors for David Price. You got anything here?
Yeah, Darvish definitely has turned his season around. We haven't seen, actually, he hasn't had a start with more than one walk since June.
Yeah,
and awesome. He hasn't had a start with more than 2 walks since June 5th. And he hasn't had a start with more than 3 walks. May 9th.
Okay.
All of those are very good. And his strikeout rate it's not quite the elite game-changing Yu Darvish levels that it used to be, but it's still very good. Yeah, I think he's back. And someone that you're starting pretty much every time out. I agree with you on David Price. He's had an interesting season because he's been good, but man, that guy doesn't go deep into games.
No, not at all.
He's averaging like right around 5 innings per start. You probably sit him at Yankee Stadium. I'm not sure I quite believe he can't mentally pitch there, but he's just kind of he's a little bit more matchups oriented than he used to be.
Well, you sit most pitchers at Yankee Stadium. Yeah. Now, if they don't have, they're not going to have Gary Sanchez, they're not going to have Luke Voit. So they're not going to have Stanton, obviously. They might not have LeMahieu. Yeah, I mean, if LeMahieu's out and Voit's out and Sanchez is out, then it's a different conversation. But otherwise, you know, Price just isn't pitching that well right now. And he said he has some stuff to figure out before his next start. That doesn't give me a lot of confidence going
Yankees. Not a lot of confidence going into a start against the Yankees at Yankee Stadium.
Didn't matter for Alex Young yesterday, of course. But fringy starting pitchers, who are your favorites? Denelson Lamet, Ronaldo Lopez, Chris Bassett, Tyler Beattie Little Eyes, and Griffin Canning.
My favorites, and I think three of these guys are legitimately interesting. Lopez, Canning, and Lamet in that order. I think that's the order I would go. And Lopez, that's what, four good starts in a row now since the All-Star break. This one wasn't quite as good as the previous ones, the four walks. Definitely a little bit concerning, but he's been getting swings and misses. He's been getting strikeouts, and you know, for a guy who throws as hard, that had kind of always been an issue for him.
I had such an argument about Griffin Canning with a co-manager yesterday who wanted to drop him. And we still would have gotten his start, but wanted to drop him.
He's a really frustrating pitcher.
Well,
right?
I think he's fairly predictable. He's a matchups guy. I mean, for sure. I had no problem starting Griffin Canning against Detroit, and he fired six scoreless innings with seven Ks. I was foolish enough to start him at Texas a few weeks ago, and it was awful. I sat him at Houston, and it was awful. And then he went out, and he had a terrible, terrible relief outing in an extra inning game against Baltimore. I'm not really going to hold that against him. What I expect is, in the midst of all these games, I expect a lot of starts like what he did at Seattle a few starts ago. Five innings, two runs, six strikeouts. Maybe it's more like five strikeouts. That's an okay pitcher. You don't need to own Griffin Canning. And quite frankly, I don't know that I'm starting him at Cincinnati, or I'm definitely not starting him at Boston next week.
Yeah.
But at Cincinnati in a daily league is where I own Canning. That's going to be iffy. That's going to be iffy.
I think I would.
Yeah. No Puig. That helps.
Offense has gotten a little worse. But that's pretty borderline for him.
We got some emails, fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Oh, and by the way, to continue what I was saying, the argument I got into was like, you know, my co-manager was like, Griffin, he never pitches six innings. His ERA is terrible. Now, the ERA thing, I think you can explain with matchups. The six innings thing, we just talked about Denelson Lamet, Chris Bassett, Griffin Canning, Ronaldo Lopez. Lopez might be the only one who's going to give you any length. You never get six innings from Lamet. You're lucky to get it from Canning. Bassett, you're kind of lucky to get it from him.
I mean, you're lucky to get six innings from
David Price.
all but about 20 starters
exactly,
at this point.
Exactly.
You know, that's something that, like, Blake Snell last year didn't go deep into games all that often. Partially because they were keeping his pitches low, but partially because this is not an era that selects for efficiency for pitchers. It's an era that selects for the ability to get swings and misses and the ability to get strikeouts. And you're going to have to go deep into counts to do that. And all these guys that we're talking about, pretty much, with the exception of Beattie, are that kind of pitcher. Lamet and Canning and Lopez especially are trying to set guys down with swinging strikes. And it's hard to go deep when you're throwing that hard and with that much effort and trying to get strikeouts.
And managers are not cowards because they understand the analytics about pitchers going through the order the third time. All right, some emails. fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. This is from Dan in Grafton. Hi, Tommy, Dutch, Johnny, and Bobby.
I have no idea.
Cobra Kai. Cobra Kai villains.
Okay.
And the Karate Kid. I was hoping you could do a segment on the show for us Dynasty League guys who are out of the running this year and are looking to improve our team for next year through trades before the trade deadline. Can you identify some players who are underperforming this year that have little value to their current owners that you expect to have good years next year?
Yes, I can.
So I might be alone on this, but I like Max Fried. I think he could have a nice little career.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that.
That comes to mind.
One of the first things that came to mind for me was Zach Wheeler. Mm-hmm. Not someone that fantasy players are particularly enthused about right now. You might be able to get him for a relatively cheap cost, especially with the injury. And yeah, I think he's a lot better than his ERA suggests. I don't think he's going to be as good as he was last year, but you know, a mid threes ERA with a lot of strikeouts is still very much within the realm of possibility for him. So that's one particular name. And you know, I don't know if this fits the question quite, but Noah Syndergaard's another guy that I think will be significantly better moving forward than he has been. And maybe it's a good chance to buy low on Germán Márquez.
There might be a perception that Carlos Correa isn't a great player. And I don't really believe that. I think when he's healthy, he is potentially a 900 OPS guy. Yep. So it depends on your league and how the Correa owner values him, but shortstop's pretty deep. So I wouldn't mind. Like Bogarts doesn't really steal bases or anything like that. He's having an amazing year. I could see Correa being even better than Xander Bogarts going forward.
Sure.
So that's one guy I take a look at. Let's read some more emails here. I got to dip into the inbox here. Okay, how about who to drop for Van Meter in a 10-team Roto Dynasty League? This comes from Michael. Scott Kingery, Scooter Jeanette, Brandon Lau, Lorenzo Cain, Lourdes Gurriel, or Ryan Yarbrough? Dynasty, keep in mind.
I think it might be Lau just because he's not, it doesn't sound like he's particularly close to returning from his shin injury.
He said shin. I know it didn't sound that way. Keeper shin. League here from Lyle. Who do you think has the better season rest of year, Will Smith or Travis d'Arnaud?
Smith.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is from John. What is Kirby Yates's trade value right now if an owner was to seek a hitter in a keeper league with prospects?
In a keeper league, that's an interesting question because Kirby Yates was someone that the Padres were reportedly considering moving this season. He's having the best year of his career. He's arguably been the best. He's probably been the best reliever in baseball for fantasy purposes. But he could go somewhere where he's not necessarily the guaranteed closer. So I think trying to sell him right now in a dynasty league makes a lot of sense.
We should answer this question tomorrow, I think. You
that's
know?
True.
Because he's on the block. He might get traded today. But he's good enough to be a closer. Like, he should not be a setup man.
But I would say trading relievers in Dynasty is probably a good idea.
True. True. Here's a grade the trade from Timothy. Give Chris Paddock, get Kyle Hendricks.
C?
Okay. Here's a grade the trade from Josh. All right, it's a complicated one.
Okay.
Give up Darvish, Brad Hand, and Eloy Jimenez.
Okay.
They are worth a combined $49.
Okay.
Darvish, Hand, and Eloy Jimenez for $49. Get Max Kepler, Zach Gallen, and Mackenzie Gore for $20. So you're going to save $29. You're going to give up Darvish, Hand, and Eloy. You're going to get Kepler, Gallen, and Mackenzie, and this is Mackenzie Gore, and this is a keeper league.
I think that's a B. I think you're winning that one. Presumably, you're kind of punting on the rest of the season a little bit there. Losing Eloy does hurt. That's the one place where you're really giving up a potential long-term piece. But I still like the overall return a little bit more.
Yeah. All right. And last one is from Brandon. You haven't talked about the aces metric much lately. Are you still tracking it, and has it been helpful?
We had a mid-season update, and one thing that we have seen so far is some of the guys that we talked about who we liked because of it haven't been, you know, I think Zach Eflin's a really good example of someone who we liked as a sleeper largely because of that. And then he came out and just wasn't throwing as hard, and the stuff wasn't as good. And so, you know, that's something that you always have to keep in mind with something like aces, with something like ex-WOBA, with anything like that. Skill fluctuates too, and not everybody can hold on when they make gains. That's a tough thing that to to have to grapple with. But, you know, as much as we know right now about baseball, there's still the human element in a very real way. These are human beings. They're not just going to throw 97 miles an hour every single time. It's a range.
Right. All right. Well, Chris, I'm done for the day. Thank you very much. Thank you all for listening. Hope you enjoyed it. We will talk to you tomorrow. Oh, boy, this is a bad outro. It's a bad one.
It's pretty typical.
Yeah, it's typically bad. It's, all right, it needs to end. Bye, everyone. Now it's even worse. Bye. Talk to you tomorrow.